I would like to welcome to Planet Waves FM Christine Massey in Southern Ontario, Canada. Christine, it is an honor to have you on the program. Welcome to Planet Waves FM.
Thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate it.
Now, my understanding is what you've been doing is submitting Freedom of Information requests to governments and institutions around the world. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but without exception, they have all said that there is, you're asking for evidence of samples of purified isolate of SARS-CoV-2, and they're all saying they don't have it.
More or less, I'll just correct you a tiny bit. So, yes, we've been submitting these requests to institutions around the world, myself personally, mostly in Canada and a few other countries, but there's been people around the world helping with this.
Great.
And we now have responses. Well, I have responses collected on my website from 107 institutions in roughly 20 countries. And I have at least one more or two or three more already to add to that. So it's well over 100 different institutions. And they all failed to provide or cite any record that describes this alleged virus having been purified from a patient sample. So the way my requests have been worded were, any record, so for any study or report that describes the isolation of this alleged virus by anyone in the world. So I wasn't asking necessarily if they have done it or if they have a sample themselves, but if they even just have any study, you know, where someone else explains, you know, with the actual methodology that they have purified the virus, mm-hmm. the alleged virus, and they have all failed to provide any record whatsoever.
That's what I was trying to say, yes.
I'm sorry?
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. So in Canada, most of the institutions gave a straightforward, we have no records, no research, we didn't find anything. Because by law in Canada, if they don't have a record, they're supposed to come right out and say it. And so most of them did that. But in other countries, you know, it depends on the institution and it even just depends sometimes on the particular person that's responding to you. But sometimes they'll give you a straightforward answer, we don't have anything. Or sometimes they give you records and they pretend that they're giving you records that match what you asked for, but they don't.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Nobody has it. Yeah.
Now, the reason that this particular branch of research, in my view, is so important is that the polymerase chain reaction assay that is supposed to test for SARS-CoV-2 requires an actual sequence in order to be a valid test. Now, there are many more steps that need to be taken once there's a valid patient-isolated sequence to meet the gold standard, but it starts with having a target sequence that is accurate.
Right. And, I mean, you need to know that there really is a virus. And like you said, a gold standard to compare the test results to.
The gold standard has about 10 more steps, but it starts with having a sample of the thing said to be deadly. And what you're saying is no one has said, yes, we have a little bottle of it. Here we go. We have a record of this. And I find this astounding because I'm looking at Worldometer right now, whatever the heck that is, and it's saying that as of this moment, there are 4,772,432 deaths from SARS-CoV-2. But I just heard you say, unless I am hallucinating, that 107 institutions, including countries, state, and provincial governments, do not have any samples of this stuff.
That's correct. So,
or records of samples or studies showing those.
Yeah. They don't have any record of anyone on the planet ever having purified the alleged virus from any patient sample. They don't have any record of anyone having done that. So, and what they, like, for example, we also have, or these are coming from top institutions. Not all of them are top institutions. Some are municipalities. But, for example, we have, I think there were 5 responses from the CDC. So when I say 107 institutions and counting, those are separate institutions. And then from some of those institutions, we even have multiple responses. So I think we have five now from the CDC. In November of last year, they just admitted flat out they didn't have any records. And then in some more recent responses, they've said things like, for example, in one response in March, I think it's the March 1st response, I can actually read a quote, if you don't mind just waiting a second.
Yeah, that's but fine.
Sometimes institutions will say things like, well, what you're asking for just isn't done. Like they're admitting that it's not
Yeah,
just
for example, I saw that exact response from Mount Sinai.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm reading from a response from the U.S. CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, March 1st, and they say the definition of isolation, so I'll just explain. So in my requests and all the ones where people use my wording, we just make it very clear. Like in the beginning, I used the word isolation, and later I switched to purification just because there's less confusion when you use that word. But we're always clarify, like we're talking about any record where they separated the alleged virus from everything else in a patient sample. And, and they didn't adulterate the sample. They didn't first, you know, add in some monkey cells and fetal bovine germ or whatever. And so we're just talking about the everyday definition of the word isolation or purification. So what the CDC said on March 1st, the definition of isolation provided in a request is outside of what is possible in virology, as viruses need cells to replicate and cells require liquid food. However, SARS-CoV-2 virus may be isolated from a human clinical specimen by culturing in cell culture, which is the definition of isolation as used in microbiology. So there, and we have different institutions on record saying things like that, like what you're asking for, it just is never done in virology, period.
Okay.
So they're not telling you won't have a record like that just for SARS-CoV-2. They're telling us for virology in general, you won't find any purified samples of viruses.
Right. This has a lot of implications. So what we're saying here is, and I'm going to read a little bit about McMaster in Toronto, mm-hmm. but virology is a science, or they say that it is. A science must mm-hmm. follow the scientific method. The scientific right. method of virology was established by two eminent virologists, one named Koch and one named Rivers. And the rules say things like you must be able to replicate the disease by inoculating test animals with the isolated purified isolate. You must be able to cause the disease you claim the virus causes to be able to say the virus causes the disease. Did I get that right?
Right. Yeah, more or less. And with Koch's postulates, I personally don't talk about them usually, just because when you mention them, you'll get these condescending responses that they try to make it sound like we have no idea what we're talking about. And the way they do that is with Koch's postulates, it's true that if viruses really did exist, you wouldn't be able to do a strict application of Koch's postulates because with Koch's postulates, it was originally for bacteria, and so it talks about culturing in a pure sample, just having the bacteria grow on their own.
Yes.
So that's the thing where they say, well, viruses can't do that, right? And then, which we know, right? So, but they use it to make it sound like we don't know what we're talking about. And then the other thing is, in Koch's postulates, strictly speaking, since we're looking for a virus that supposedly causes disease in humans, you would have to, once you get a purified sample of it, you would need to expose healthy humans to that, and that's no longer considered ethical to do that kind of research. So they use, like you're saying, animals instead. So, but the thing is, yeah, like people tend to say Koch's postulates sort of as a shorthand for, you know, carry out these logical sort of steps that you would expect to be done, and they published their studies published in prestigious journals like Nature, claiming that the 2003 imaginary stars virus and the newer imaginary virus did satisfy Koch's postulates. So they mention Koch's postulates when it suits them, but whenever we mention it, they use it to make it sound like we don't know what we're talking about. But yeah, you would expect these logic-based steps to have been carried out, and I'm pretty sure most members of the public assume that something logical and scientific was done, and this is all 100%, known to be true, that there is this virus and that supposed tests are all validated, and we keep hearing about confirmed cases, and they believe that, and they would just be flabbergasted if they knew the truth of what was really going on.
Well, the truth is so insane that the truth is so insane, they'll say you're crazy, because the truth sounds crazy. The truth being that not only have they never found the stuff sufficient to have some, they don't have an actual sequence from wild, live, patient virion, and therefore they cannot test for the thing they say that they're testing for.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. The reason why, I always just focus on the purification step in all these requests is, if you didn't first purify it, you would need to purify it from the patient sample, and then you could extract the genetic material from that thing, so that you know that the genetic material you have is coming from that thing and nothing else. And then you could sequence it and come up with the genome. And then you could characterize it, so you know you're characterizing that specific thing and not a soup of things, a mixture of things. And then you could do controlled experiments. And you can't do controlled experiments if you just have a patient sample or something from a cell culture, a mixture of things, and you're just assuming that there's a virus in there. You can't do a controlled experiment that way. So that's why we know if you didn't purify it to begin with, then you couldn't have done all those other steps correctly. So that's why, to simplify things, I just focus on the purification part.
Yes.
Just to try to make it easier for the public to understand, because the more questions you ask, and then the more ridiculous responses, and it just makes it more confusing for everybody to try to read through everything
We're speaking to an informed audience here. I have given this presentation 40 or 50 times in different forms. You are my best witness to the fact that no government admits or claims to have the thing legitimately that they are testing for. And what I cannot say enough times is, if you don't have any, you cannot test for it. If you don't have any, you don't know what's causing the disease, if anything is. And if you don't have any, you can't say that there is a pandemic of that thing of which you have none.
Exactly. And so that was, we had these brilliant people like Dr. Andrew Kaufman and Dr. Thomas Callan and Stefan Lanka and all these people explaining that to the public. So I thought, well, when I first started learning about it, I thought, well, number one, if I do these requests, it'll be a way to verify, because most people don't have time to look at all the studies for themselves. They're just not going to do it. And then you never know, too, did you miss something? So I thought, well, I'll, do these requests, and that way, if it turns out we're wrong and something was missed, then everyone can be corrected. And if it turns out that they're right, then it'll be a way to simplify things for people to see that what these gentlemen are telling people, not just men, but, they're the ones that are most well known. What they're saying is accurate. It's true. So it was a way of verifying, their teachings, their
claims,
their explanation public as to what's going on. So,
but with the Freedom of Information Law, the we have no records can be a very important response.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's not just even once or twice. You sometimes in the beginning, people would try to say, well, you didn't really ask the right institution. They wouldn't be the ones that would have it. And, they would say that, you know, with Health Canada, even though Health Canada approved the so-called COVID-19 clinical trials and tests and injections and everything. But or they would say, well, you know, you're dealing with administrative people. They don't really know what to look for. But we have so many responses. And like I said, multiple times from the CDC, multiple times from Public Health England, multiple times from the UK Department of Health and Social Care, on and on and on. Like, you know, once you get into these numbers where you've got dozens and now it's over 100, like, you know, it's not just a mistake here and there. It's consistent across the board. So,
well, to me, please continue. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, like, and it's not even like we need to, you know, even if someone could produce one record where they purified something and they say that's the virus, that, you know, you don't need to purify it just from even one or two people. You would need to do it for many people and check and see if it's in healthy people too. And even that should all be replicated by independent groups, but they haven't even got one example from one patient. So, you know, I think it's crystal clear at this point that, I think it was crystal clear last year, but even for the doubters by now, it should be crystal clear that the whole thing is just made up.
Yes. This is proof positive. Again, 5 million claimed deaths, but no one has the thing said to be deadly.
Exactly.
Can we talk?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. And speak into your phone. Just speak into your phone clearly, please.
I'm sorry.
Great. Thank you.
Go ahead. I interrupted you.
Where was I going? I'm curious the order in which you proceeded. So what was the, when did you start doing this and who did you reach to first?
Okay. So the first one I did was May 14th, 2020. And the first institution I approached was Health Canada. And I think at that time, honestly, I wasn't even as familiar with the Public Health Agency of Canada. And so I had, you know, we hear about Health Canada a lot, or at least I had over the years growing up. So I started with them, and then, you know, and then I would get people saying, well, you know, you should have asked the Public Health Agency of Canada. And anyway, so I just gradually started doing more and more Canadian institutions, and I started with those more, you know, the ones at the top of the public health community in Canada. And I also did the municipality that I was living in. And so I didn't know it was going to turn into a huge project in the beginning. I just thought, you know, I started sharing the answers on social media. And then what happened, gradually I was getting, you know, I just kept doing it. It wasn't very deliberate in the beginning. It might have been like a few weeks or months before I submitted another request. But gradually I was getting the responses and I would put them on social media. And then I had people from other countries saying, do you mind if I use the wording in my country? I said, of course not, please do. And so people started collecting them. And I'm sure other people did it, you know, just on their own accord too, without having known what I was doing. And then I just became known as someone that was collecting them all in one spot to make it easy for people to find them all. And so the collection just grew and grew in a really very organic sort of way over time. Mm-hmm. With the people, you know, whoever out there deciding they wanted to approach a certain institution. And with me, it was focused mainly in the Ontario. I live in Ontario, which is one of the provinces of Canada. And so I was focusing mainly in Ontario, and then other people have done other provinces as well. So it's just grown in a very organic sort of way.
So let's not rush this.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of a viral pandemic, as validated by science, is that scientific institutions and laboratories have in fact proven that SARS-CoV-2 exists and that it is the deadly pathogen responsible for 4.7 million deaths around the world, right? That's the concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why everyone's rushing out, not everyone, That's why many people are rushing out to get injected, is because they feel sufficiently, they believe that there is a scientific basis to the claim of a pandemic by a virus. And the beginning of the validity of that scientific claim would be, we have a sample of the virus, which we know is the disease and death causing pathogen. And they don't have that.
Correct.
You're sure?
No doubt.
107. 107. Including and multiples counting. From the CDC and counting.
Yeah, we have about five from the CDC, and the most recent one, the first one was November 2nd of last year. My colleague in New Zealand had written to them, and they gave him a very straightforward response that time. They just said flat out they don't have any. And then there's been a few more since then, and the most recent from the U.S. CDC. I did that one, and I got a response on September 8th of this year, just 20 days ago. And they said this time, they said the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases provided the link to the following study that is responsive to your request. They gave me the URL, and when you click on that, it takes you to a study, U.S. CDC real-time reverse transcription PCR panel for detection of severe acute, blah, blah, blah. So this is a study where they were developing or validating, not really validating, but pretending to validate their PCR test. And so in this study, they don't even claim to have isolated the virus themselves. They just mention that it already was isolated, quote unquote, isolated in viral cells. And
that's not isolation.
Right, exactly.
If it's mixed with something else, they're all doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. The McMaster University, you know that smug photo of the three scientists with their arms folded, looking like, you know, they know more than you. And this is how they claimed isolation and purification. And first of all, they don't answer their phone. They never published a paper.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, yeah, it was, you know, there were four institutions involved in that claim. It was University of Toronto, McMaster University, Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, and Mount Sinai Hospital. These are all in Ontario, Canada. And they claim to have jointly isolated the virus, the imaginary virus, but they pretend it's real. So they put out this study, and so I actually have responses from all four of those institutions, from all of them saying that they're all on my website as well. All of these are on my website, very easy to access. And one of them gave, I'm just scrolling down through the page here, one of them gave especially interesting, I'm just going to read the quote for you. Finding it, what they said.
And I can't wait to read these and analyze these myself.
So, okay, here we are. So, Mount Sinai, so I got responses from all four institutions. Well, I started with the University of Toronto, and they didn't give me a direct response. They said they're going to forward the request to Sunnybrook. So I got a response from Sunnybrook, and I clarified with the person who gave the response. They said that it was on behalf of both Sunnybrook and the University of Toronto, saying they had no records. Mm-hmm. And then Mount Sinai Health, the person said to me, I have been engaging with our experts at Sinai Health regarding your request. We are not clear on the records that you are requesting, as we are not aware the isolation of a virus in the manner you have described is possible for any virus. It is not within the scope of current scientific processes. On this basis, we are not able to process your request as it is currently worded. And we get lots like that, various institutions just arguing. There's another example. It's either the March 1st or March 3rd. back and forth that my colleague in New Zealand had with the USCBC, and you know, they would just at times just argue with him over the definition of the word isolation, even though he had already specified exactly what he meant. And it's his request, not their request, but they would just say, well, no, that's not how viruses are isolated. And I got the same thing from the Public Health Agency of Canada. They were the, we now have in total 32 Canadian institutions on record, and they all admitted flat out that they don't have any records because they're required to under the applicable legislation, except the Public Health Agency of Canada. And I guess it was because for them, it's especially embarrassing to admit that they don't have any records. So what the Public Health Agency of Canada did was they provided me with records pretending that they were responsive, but of course they're not. And what they gave me were some emails between people from the Public Health Agency of Canada and other institutions. Well, they had people from Public Health Ontario asking them how to culture the imaginary virus. If that was kind of interesting, it was pretty clear that they didn't really know what they were doing. But they also provided a study, and it was a study that had been supported by the Public Health Agency of Canada. And the study doesn't even claim to have isolated a virus, but what they did do are PCR tests. And they did the same monkey cell nonsense, but they did it for a different purpose. It wasn't one of these studies where we said, hey, we isolated the virus, but they were doing those same sort of procedures. And they said right in the abstract of that paper that PCR tests do not detect infectious virus, only RNA. And yet, at the same time, in Public Health Agency of Canada's response to my request, they were saying that the monkey cell nonsense shows that they have the virus, and then the PCR confirms it. So,
now, I think what most people don't understand is that for the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction, to work, you have to have the thing you're looking for. If you're looking for daffodils, you have to have a daffodil sequenced, and then you enter a sample in the machine, and it tells you if it matches the thing that you sequenced.
Right.
And it does this by finding molecules.
Right. Well, and I mean, the thing with PCR, people really focus a lot on the number of cycles, but like you're saying, it doesn't even detect, it's not even cycling on supposed viruses or even whole genomes. They're only targeting these tiny, tiny, tiny little sequences that they claim are part of the genome of this imaginary virus that has never been found, never been purified, never been sequenced. They just fabricated all their genomes, and so nobody can even say, there's no basis for even claiming that these sequences that they're looking for would be from a virus, let alone, you know, that they couldn't be from multiple other things as well. So
yes, that's because they haven't done the original work to make sure that they have the daffodil to find the daffodil.
Exactly. So even if they did know that the daffodil or the virus existed, it still wouldn't be a valid test. It still couldn't prove that you have that thing. But in the case of viruses, they haven't even shown that these things exist in the first place. So there never should have. This is why, you know, like you said, it's so important for people to understand this issue, that the virus hasn't even been identified. I shouldn't even say the virus. I try to stop myself from saying that. The imaginary virus or the alleged virus.
Well, the alleged sequence, right.
They haven't even shown it exists, so there was nothing to test for. There was nothing to protect yourself against. None of this. Nobody should have ever breathed a word about COVID-19 or the supposed virus, because the virus wasn't even shown to exist.
Yep.
It's just all a clearly a made-up story when you look at how they came up with their genomes, too. It's, like, ridiculous. It has nothing to do with anything that actually exists. It's just a fairy tale. It's just
it's a tautology. That's a fancy word for it is because 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 it is.
Exactly.
That's the logic of their unscientific method. If I may read, if I may read from the work of John Rappaport, an American investigative reporter, who on April 8th, 2020, published from a document called CDC 2019 Novel Coronavirus Real-Time RT-PCR Diagnostic Panel. That's the name of the document. Quote, detection of viral RNA, alleged, detection of viral RNA may not indicate the presence of infectious virus or that 2019 nCoV is the causative agent for clinical symptoms. CDC says this. Here's from the World Health Organization, a similar document. Quote, several assays detect the 2019 nCoV that detect 2019 nCoV have been and are currently under development, both in-house and commercially. Some assays may detect only the novel virus, if it exists, and some may also detect other strains that are genetically similar. So they're saying even if they have this sample, the test does not test for virus or infectiousness or infection. You might think, what does it do? And well, it causes a big fuss, but go ahead.
It's the gold standard though, right? This is what they use as the gold standard. There's multiple institutions having said that PCR is the gold standard.
Well, okay, so Carrie Mullis, what Carrie Mullis said was that PCR requires the gold standard to be met in order to be valid.
Yeah, of course.
The gold standard, and I would argue, you know what I'm saying? They're misusing that phrase, which is out of the lexicon of PCR. But what Mullis meant was that when you're testing for daffodil, you already know you have daffodil on the one side of the machine that you're, and so therefore you can look for it. Mm-hmm. That's what he meant. And when you do that with a disease-causing agent, let's pretend it's a bacteria, the bacteria is known to be the right bacteria, and it is known to be the disease-causing agent, proven. Then you can use the PCR to look for genetic fragments of the bacteria as a secondary marker subject to further confirmation that you have actually identified the disease-causing agent.
Exactly.
What
because,
burns...
again, it...
Go.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, because another point that I think a lot of people don't understand was even if there was a virus in a patient sample, before they do the PCR test, they would have to destroy the virus because the PCR only works with the genetic material, and so they add an enzyme that has to open up cell walls, and if there was a natural virus, it would open that up so the genetic material could come out. So even if you knew there was a virus, even if one had been proven to exist and to be causing disease, detecting even a sequence, even if you detected a whole genome, I guess, which it doesn't, they don't even try to, but you couldn't know for sure if it has been intact. You know, you don't know if it came from an intact virus. Was the virus already destroyed before you started your PCR?
Yeah.
You know, before you took the patient sample, maybe the virus was already broken down, you know, and you're just detecting bits of broken down viruses that weren't good. So even if there was a virus, it's just like you said, it could only ever be at best like a screening test. That would still need some better sort of confirmation.
But it's being used as a diagnostic, total diagnosis. Someone says, I was diagnosed with COVID. That means that they got a positive result on the PCR, which is not diagnostic. It cannot find virus. It cannot find proof of infection. It can barely find, even in the best case scenario, evidence of possible infection. I'll read from a CDC document from it's document 006-0019. And it's talking about the detection limit and the method of the PCR working. And it says the analytical sensitivity of the RRT, meaning real-time reverse transcriptase PCR assays. Hold on. Since no qualified virus isolates of the 2019 nCoV are available, assays designed for the detection of 2019 nCoV RNA were tested with characterized stocks, blah, 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 to mimic a clinical specimen. CDC, in its documentation, admits that there are no quantified isolates, and therefore they are mimicking a human specimen.
Correct. And that document, I don't know if you mentioned which version.
It's the one from July. It's July 13th. July. It's the second one.
Yes, I have. It's revision 5 from July of last year. I have that preserved on my website too. And there were people, you know, trying to make a point, like maybe I won't name names, but there were several, at least two prominent people that I know of last year who were trying to discredit people using that document as, you know, evidence that, that the virus, you know, the virus hasn't been shown to exist, hasn't actually been purified. They were using the argument, well, that document was revised for a different purpose. They only revised a certain section and they hadn't updated the other section that you just read. And, you know, so they were poo-pooing the whole thing. So that was why, I mean, we have lots of different angles of evidence, but I mean, I would argue that when an organization puts out a revision of a document, you expect the whole thing to be revised, right? Like, wouldn't put out a document and revise something.
You expect it to be relevant.
I left everything else out of date. So, there were people trying to brush that document aside, but it really is very, it's very clear in what they're saying. So, but that's why it's nice that we have all these different lines of evidence, you know, that you don't have to rely on just one document, or, you know, we have it coming from so many different directions. And anyone who does take the time to actually look at the studies for themselves can just very easily actually see for themselves that nothing is actually being purified. And another point, too, is sometimes the patient samples, before they even get to a lab, I can't really comment on how often this happens, but I know that at least sometimes what happens, you know, a patient sample is taken, say, at a hospital or wherever they took the sample, and then they often have to transport it to a lab where they actually do the other, you know, I guess the PCR test, and certainly if they're looking to see if they can supposedly isolate the imaginary virus, they have to transport it. And so they'll put the swabs or this whatever specimen they have, they store it in something called virus transport medium. And we see this it's often mentioned in the so-called virus isolation studies. It's either referred to as virus transport medium or universal transport medium. And my colleague in New Zealand, Michael, he found the CDC has a standard operating procedure for making basically a recipe for making virus transport medium. Mm-hmm. And the ingredients include the fetal bovine serum and the toxic drugs. So sometimes, like I said, I don't know how often, because there's different recipes out there for virus transport medium. But we know that at least sometimes, and definitely in some of these virus isolation studies, they already contaminated their patient sample before they even did anything, like before they did a PCR test or before they did their monkey cell business. And, you know, I think the public, again, they would just be stunned if they realized things like that.
That there's no scientific basis to the scientific, allegedly scientific claim of a virus or pandemic. The reasoning is it must be true. It can't not be true. These people can't all be lying. What's making people sick? None of those are scientific. None of those are scientific statements. And I don't object to the statement something's making people sick. I've been covering dioxin since 1991. Of course something's making people sick. But that is not the same thing as saying that SARS-CoV-2 has caused a global pandemic that has killed 4.7 million people and sickened 3 million people. And we know because we have the science to prove it, that science starts with having a sample sequenced of the virus and some way to say that's the thing causing it, whatever this disease is. So what you get here is this wide open thing where basically anyone, once you get past this step, anyone can claim anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John Rappaport has done a really great job. He's one of my heroes, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I was on his email list for years. And he was one of the reasons why when this all started, it was easier to catch on to what was going on, because he had been talking about PCR tests, you know, even in the past, I think in relation to flu and maybe other viruses.
He covered HIV. He was one of the, I believe he wrote the first book about HIV.
Did he? Yeah, maybe. I don't know when I first became familiar with him, but I've been on his email list for years. He's one of my great heroes. And he's done some great articles where he addresses that whole issue of, okay, so what is making people sick? And the problem is, you know, because people have had the idea of this imaginary virus drilled into their heads day in, day out for a year and a half, they can't let go of the idea that there's something. And they think the tests actually do detect something. So like you said, they ask, well, then what is it? What is it? They think it's one thing. There is something, and there is some common denominator that is unique to all these cases, and they don't understand. If they understood just how completely meaningless these tests actually are, then they could let go of the idea that there's one thing. And like you said, there's lots of things that make people sick, and there's lots of things that can be causing respiratory disease. And even in one person, it's not necessarily one factor. There can be multiple factors, and every person has to be looked at individually.
Yes.
Just like, you know, in the past, you know, you have to figure it out and look at their history and what have they been exposed to, what's been going on in their life. And for every person, it can be different. And, you know, because of these, the PCR tests, not everyone even has a certain sequence in common, because there's different sequences they looked for. And maybe in the beginning, you had to have three certain sequences detected, although we know it might not even be there because they ran so many cycles. But and then later they said, okay, just one sequence. So maybe you found the sequence for the N gene, but not for the others. And somebody else, they detected the sequence for the E gene and not the others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there wasn't. And then you add on top the fact that they ran so many cycles, so maybe that sequence isn't even there. So you can't even say that there's anything at all in common with these so-called cases. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing. However, there's nothing. I'm trying, when I give speeches these days, I try to emphasize that there's, you can't make any sense whatsoever of the COVID-19 data. It's just meaningless. It's all, unfortunately, garbage. And it's, there's a lot of well-meaning researchers who don't realize the tests mean nothing, and there's nothing in common with all these so-called cases, and they're trying to make sense of it, but it's totally garbage. And the only thing you can use the data for would be to look at how much fraud they've gotten away with. You know, the people who actually know and who are responsible for this, how the extent of what they've done. Other than that, the data is just complete garbage. There is nothing, there's not one thing, there's no common denominator whatsoever.
The closest thing I have found is, so how the PCR works is somewhat complex, and there's a series of steps to the experiment, and because I'm not a biochemist, certain certain very technical elements, I lack full comprehension, but I still am aware that I'm making accurate statements because I have run them past so many people. And someday I'll understand the specific molecular biology. But the one common thread that that runs from China to Corman and Drosten, the designers of the original WHO assay, PCR, and then straight to the CDC, is a sequence called MN908947, of which there's been 0.1, 0.2, and they're now up to 0.3. This is, this is claimed to have been from a patient released by China on January 5th. By the way, as I understand it, the upload came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, so at least we can implicate them in one thing. They published this sequence, which became, it was cited by Corman and Drosten, who wrote what I call the Constitution of the Pandemic, the Corman-Drosten paper, published on 1-23-20. They cite MN908947, and then in the document I just read from, the CDC document, they too cite MN908947 in their paperwork. And this was the first sequence released by China. Then it's quoted by Corman and Drosten, who also use SARS-CoV-1, which they claim exists, which is still, I agree with you, that too is tripping balls. And then the CDC references it for what they call a sequence of the N gene. It's really only a partial sequence of the gene of a virus that no one's shown to exist. But this is the magic number, MN908947. Now, no one knows what that actually is. There's no chain of custody on this sample.
And you said that corresponds somehow to the N, what they call the N gene?
Yeah, the CDC, my source, David Bettini, and CDC say that it is the N gene, a partial. Bettini warns me it is a partial sequence of the N gene that is among the other bits of information data used to make up the in silico sequence. So what everyone admits is going on, Corman and Drosten most notably, who wrote the original WHO assay that basically every country besides the United States uses.
Oh, so do you mean like when they're supposedly pretending to validate their tests, they use this sequence?
Well, no, they say that, as far as I understand it, is a component of the in silico sequence. In other words, the PCR has to be primed with something, i.e. you need daffodil to find daffodil. But when you don't have any daffodil, you then have to use some theoretical daffodil, which is called a mimicked clinical specimen or an in silico sequence, depending on who you ask. CDC calls it a mimicked clinical specimen. Corman and Drosten call it an in silico sequence, meaning it is theoretical. In silico means in computer. Silicon, as in what a chip is made of.
Right.
And so Corman and Drosten cooked up a sequence that comprises the primers of the WHO test. So they have to prime the PCR with something. You have to. Whether it's good or bad or perfect or completely garbage and test positive for water, you have to have primers in this test that supposedly annul to the thing you're looking for in the sample brought in from the field, i.e. the parking lot of Walmart, where they shoved the thing up somebody's nose.
Right.
The destiny of that Q-tip is that the sample is extracted, which itself has the possibility of a 1 to 10,000-fold error in the amount, and then the sample is put into the PCR, and the nature of the test is, does this sample match this sequence that we already have? And everyone's admitting that it's an in silico sequence. You're showing why no one has any real stuff. CDC admits why they do not have purified isolate. They say it outright. But the stuff that comes in from the Walmart parking lot has to be declared positive or negative. And the way they do that, among other things, is they match it against the sample in the machine. Those are called the primers.
I guess I just would have assumed, because, you know, they don't just test for N gene, right? They test for different,
E-gene,
like there's RDR.
They claim to test for the N gene and the E gene. There's supposed to be three. They're only doing two. And most notably, WHO's assay does not have a genetic marker for whether the test came from a human. Whether the sample came from a human. Hence, pawpaw fruit and water can test positive.
Right. I guess just what I was thinking of, when they, depending on which one they're, which sequence they're looking for, I would think they would have to use different primers. I don't have a great understanding of the primers.
Yes, that's
part,
what that's what the primers are. The primers are how the PCR connects to the target sequence. That is the target sequence. The primer is the thing they're looking for.
So if they were looking for an E gene, they wouldn't use that MN908947.
They claim to be looking for at least two genes. But what I find to be the most interesting, purely from a document assessment standpoint, is that that accession number comes up three places. It is first published by China on 1/5/20. It is the first sequence published by China. Then it appears for the second time in Eurosurveillance on January 23rd, cited by Corman and Drosten as one source of their primers for the WHO so-called German test, Charité test. It's all the same thing. When you see a reference to the German test, the Charité test, or the WHO test, all the same. That cites MN908947. Then this turns up again when the CDC publishes its notes on what it is looking for in the PCR in samples. And then again, you see that the mimicked clinical specimen also cites as its source MN908947. Those are three very important references, because the tautology begins with China publishing this sequence of unknown origin. There is no chain of custody. If I may explain what chain of custody is, let's say I am trying to prove that the state left PCBs in the ventilation ducts of a dormitory. Right? When I take a sample, let's say I get a student to let me in the building and I dismantle the heating system and I take a sample, I've got to have videotape of me taking the sample. I then put it in a bottle, I barcode the bottle, I keep my half of the barcode, I then videotape myself putting it in the FedEx, I document the whole thing for my version of chain of custody. I need to prove that that sample came from that vent and was unadulterated going to the lab. Because they can say, well, how do you know you didn't get it from the PCB dump site in Pittsfield, Massachusetts? And I'll say, well, here you go. I have a witness, Father McGillicuddy from the local church, or, you know, someone, and we have videotape, and we're good. I can prove to you that this sample came from the Gage Hall basement floor lounge. When China publishes MN908947, that's it. It's a bunch of computer code. We don't know where it came from. We don't know what it means. We don't know the patient outcome. We don't know if there was a patient. We don't know shit. And that became the basis of the in silico sequence of both WHO and CDC of at least one gene. But what is it?
What
we
is
know,
it? Yeah.
We know it's not purified isolate because they don't have any. Nobody's got any. Have you by any chance written to China? Do you have?
No. I every once in a while, I think that would be a good thing to do. I don't even know if they have freedom of information legislation in China.
I'm sure they don't, but who knows? Maybe. But they're good bureaucrats. Maybe they have. Maybe it's customary to answer all letters. You know.
Actually, I was surprised. My colleague in New Zealand.
Oops, I'm losing you a little bit.
One of the Chinese virologists, and they actually weren't answering his emails, so I was surprised that that happened. But yeah, it would be nice to. Well, there was that Chinese. I think he was a virologist. He was someone from the Chinese CDC, and there's that video. I'm sure you've seen it. Probably a lot of your listeners have seen it, where there's a clip where he was saying the problem is they didn't isolate the virus.
Yeah. Is this Little Bear? Or
that
is this a named, is it a named person or is it the whistleblower Little Bear?
His name, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but his name is provided in the video. From what I recall, he's someone fairly high up at their CDC, but there was never much context with that. That's why I never personally said much about it. You just see this clip and you don't have the whole context of the conversation. So I know John Rappaport mentioned in one of his articles that he emailed that gentleman to ask for clarification. And I don't know if he ever received a response or not.
Right. So to sum up, you're going to say, and then we'll sum up.
I was just, you know, another thing that comes up in my mind that I haven't heard anyone talking about, but you mentioned the human, like when they're looking at sequences, for example, when they're fabricating their genomes and they pretend they detect millions and millions of sequences in a sample or in a cell culture, and then they claim that they just know which ones are from the virus and which ones are from the human and what. I always find it curious. We always hear a reference to the human genome, and on one hand we're told that we all have unique genetic code, that's what makes us what we are, which I believe is disproven, that it's not really the causal, the main driving force, but that's what they pretend. And yet then when it's convenient at other times, they make these references to the human genome as if there's one human genome that tells you everything you need to know about every human. And I always think when they're doing these sequences, how do they even convince themselves that they know which sequence, like whether a sequence is from an imaginary virus or from a human, because you would have had to sequence that particular human. Because otherwise, you don't know from a genome from another human what the genome of the current person you're working with is. So
yeah,
it's just another layer of all this nonsense that none of it adds up.
To call this voodoo would be polite. David Crowe called it tea leaf reading. So David Crowe is one of the people who explained this to me. And his arguments were holding water. And then I said, David, but what do virologists do all day long? And he said, well, I don't really know. Maybe they read tea leaves. And now I know what he meant. By the way, when I believe that MN908947 and the other five sequences published by China were assembled from all the RNA. I have several sources that this is how it's done, is that they take a sample and they run it, I guess, through CRISPR, and they make up a completely theoretical thing that they say is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's kind of like taking all the stuff in your pantry and putting it into one pot. Okay, here's a good metaphor. Let's say you take your pantry, right? I'm sure you have a nice one. And you squirt a little bit of everything in. Mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise, spaghetti, flour, sugar. You throw it in honey. And you mix it all in. A little milk, a little Hershey's syrup. And then you analyze it and you say, oh, there's milk in Hershey's syrup. We've got pure chocolate milk. That's how they're sequencing it. But when they... So that's the PCR. But then the sequence is they take the sample from the patient and they have something like a million different ways they could assemble those fragments, right? It's fragments. It's nucleotide, meaning protein fragments. And they put it together and it and they say, oh, look, it's a virus.
Right.
It's basically, yeah, it's no more chocolate milk. You wouldn't drink that stuff. You wouldn't want a spoonful of the mixture of ketchup and mustard and spaghetti and rice and oatmeal and milk and chocolate. And you wouldn't say, oh, what a lovely cup of hot cocoa on a chilly autumn afternoon.
Exactly.
Nah.
Yeah, Dr. Thomas Cowan has made a good example, too, where he says, imagine you had a box full of millions of letters or words, and then you decide to make a story from it. You know, you make Gone with the Wind or what have you. Gone with the Wind was in the box, you know, and you could make any number of other stories or books and then claim that they were, look what we found in the box. You know, that's basically how meaningful their genomes are.
Yeah.
Completely silly.
But to go back to, we've had this conversation on Planet Waves FM many times. What we have not had is you with your 107 and plus extras, 107 statements by governments, institutions, countries, provinces, and agencies admitting that they don't have the one thing they need that would even start the process of thinking that there was any form of a viral pandemic or viral disease of any kind. No such proof exists. You have been coordinating and compiling this data now for approximately, I guess, 16 months. And no one says, yes, we have some. We know this is the bad stuff.
That's right. And I don't know if you have time. Like, I can read some of the institutions from other countries if you have time.
Sure.
So, I mentioned already that we have responses from the four Canadian institutions in Ontario where they claim to have jointly isolated the virus, the imaginary virus. We have that. We also have from Canada, there's another institution, Vito Intervac, which stands for Vaccine and Infectious Organization International, something or other, at the University of Saskatchewan. They had also claimed to have isolated the virus, and we have a response from them. They have no records. And then from other countries, well, in the CDC, I mean, sorry, the U.S., I already mentioned the CDC. We also have Anthony Fauci's NIAID, or the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Mm-hmm. I did a request to them just a couple months ago, 2-3 months ago, and they just repeatedly referred me to the CDC. They basically said, that's not our business to figure out if a virus actually exists. That's the CDC's thing. And they referred me to the CDC study that you're probably familiar with by Jennifer Harcourt, and where they just did the typical monkey cell stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and then a colleague also did a request to that same institution, and this person worded it differently. He asked for any records demonstrating that institution actually has a purified sample of the virus, and they were given, I'm just looking at that response. Hello.
Hi there.
Can you hear me okay now?
Much better.
Okay, great. So I was just reading the list. So we have different responses from NIAID, and then we have New Zealand's Ministry of Health, the University of Otago in New Zealand, where researchers had claimed to have isolated the virus. They also admitted they have no record. Australia's Department of Health, the Peter Doherty Institute in Australia, where they had also claimed to have isolated the virus. We have Australia's, their Crown Research Institute, which is called the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. They have nothing. Italy's National Institute of Infectious Diseases has nothing. We have multiple responses from India's Council of Medical Research, where they had claimed to have isolated the virus and also the Delta variant. and they have nothing. UK's Government Office for Science, the UK Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, which is the agency that approved the injections, they have no record. Public Health Scotland, I think we have two from them. Public Health Wales, we have four or five, maybe even six now from Public Health England. And we have the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control. And with that one, the person who did that request, they had their own wording, and they had also asked for a protocol from that institution. Like, what protocol do you guys use for proving the existence of a new virus? And they didn't even have that. They didn't have a protocol. They didn't have anything to prove that SARS-CoV-2 actually exists. So that's just a sampling of some of the more, you know, important organizations out there.
And we'll be publishing your collections of these letters on Planet Waves FM so that readers can look for themselves and see Perfect. These. And, I've been following your work for a long time, and I understand the process that you're going through and the implications of what you're finding. If these people were ever facing a deposition, they would all be in big trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the countries that we have records from, most of the records are Freedom of Information responses, but five of these institutions are also from South Africa that were involved in a lawsuit that you probably heard about. There's some wonderful people. A gentleman named Ricardo Marmon, and he works with Dr. Fayez Kirsten. They're both in South Africa, and they actually were in court in May and specifically challenging the government to prove that this alleged virus had even been isolated or purified, because they had been doing freedom of information since last year trying to get answers, and they just weren't getting anything. So they finally took the government to court. And in court, the government just made excuses, and they were claiming, oh, they don't need to provide this evidence, that the public has no right to demand this evidence. And then the court just threw the case out, and her excuse was that it was not an urgent matter. So it's even gone to court, I believe, in Portugal, too. The government was on record as they were challenged to give proof of the existence of the virus, and they didn't have anything. And I heard a week or so ago about a new case. Mind you, this was just someone doing a video. I didn't see any actual paperwork yet, but they were talking about apparently in Spain, there's a lawsuit is being launched there. So I don't have any more details on that yet, but hopefully that is happening. Mm-hmm. And the gentlemen in South Africa are going back to court too. This time they'll be going to the Constitutional Court to pursue this matter further. So hopefully, you know, eventually all the people involved will be held responsible and all of this will come out. You know, I'm sure that's what yourself and other people like us, you know, that's our end goal. I mean, I really want the whole public to find out, you know, because it's not, COVID-19 has been horrific, but when you think too, it's not even just, you know, it was AIDS and it was all the other things that they've been injecting people for decades, all these supposed viruses. And now we know, you know, some people already knew for decades, right? But for someone like me, I just learned all this last year that we actually don't have proof that any of them even exist. And then they're already planning, you know, these future, I think the next one they have planned is called SPARS or something like that. They already have documents on the next pandemics that they've planned for the coming years. So,
a new Coca-Cola.
Yeah, exactly. They've got it all mapped out, apparently. So that's why, you know, it's so important that the public has to, you know, has to be informed. They have to, one way or another, this has to get out to as many people as possible.
Yep.
Otherwise, we'll be susceptible to the, you know, these sort of things. And, you know, I mean, they want to take it to the point that we don't even have the ability anymore to fight back in any way or to even, I think they just want to strip us of all of our humanity and our ability to even think or connect with our soul in any way whatsoever. So that's why, you know, it's, I'm really grateful that you invited me on to talk about this, and so we can just get the truth out to more and more people before, you know, we don't want to get to a point where it's, we're past, you know, that point of no return where so many people are just lost and they're not even capable of thinking anymore, and get to the point where they can't understand this, even when the information comes to them. There's already like a lot of people that they don't want to hear it, but at least, you know, if they would open their minds, they're capable of understanding it. And we just want to reach as many people as possible.
Sooner or later, everyone's going to get burned by this. Mm-hmm. Today, mm-hmm. Actually, it was extended till I think October 4th. Thousands and thousands of teachers and healthcare workers in New York are going to be fired for not receiving this injection. And in case it's not implied by what we're saying, you cannot vaccinate against a virus that does not exist.
Exactly.
And you can say the virus might exist. Well, okay. But then what exactly are you inoculating against? Possibility? And a theoretical thing? What's in that injection?
Yeah.
Right? I leave that question open. Christine, I've been so inspired by your work. I'm really looking forward to adding your collection of 100 and something letters to my larger document collection, which mainly focuses on the chemical industry. But I think that you've got this is the golden goose here. I cannot wait to read, analyze, and cross-reference these letters. There's going to be some stuff in there. I have a knack for finding the things that people miss, and I am so excited. This is like getting a new stereo for Christmas as a kid.
It'll be a great set of eyes. And just so your readers are, sorry, your listeners know, too, when they hear this, I mean, I'll be sending you the links to the compilation PDFs that I already prepared, but all of these responses are available on my website.
Which
so
is?
I'll just give the it's fluoridefreepeel.ca, and I'll just spell it because people often misspell fluoride. It's FLUO. People often want to spell it with OU instead, but it's FLUORIDE, free, FREE. Peel, PEEL .ca, fluoridefreepeel.ca. And on the homepage, you'll see in the main menu and also on the sidebar, I think on a cell phone, you don't really see the main menu, but on the sidebar, there are links there where, that mention COVID-19 or FOIs, and just click there. And then on that's my main FOI page it'll take you to.
Okay,
and
it's the first 107 science institutions globally all failed to cite even one record of SARS-CoV-2.
That's right. Yeah. And, so it's all right there. And I've got, so there's separate PDFs for all of them, but then there's near the top of the page, there's, I think there's now 7 compilation PDFs where I've been putting them, you know, every once in a while I make a new compilation of the latest responses and put it there to make it easier for people to download. And what I'm going to do eventually is replace those 7. Well, maybe I'll leave it both ways because the 7 are somewhat chronological, not 100% perfect, but they're somewhat chronological. And then what I'll also do is put up another version where they're organized somewhat by country, mm-hmm. to make it a little easier for people to find, you know, for a particular country. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing that as well. But yeah, everything is publicly available. It has been all along. Every time I become aware of a new response, I add it to the collection to try to make it easy for people. And yeah, it'll be wonderful to see what you, I'm sure you'll find little nuggets here and there that will even add to the story. So.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So thank you.
Once again, thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. I appreciate it a lot.
Fabulous. Okay, I'm going to turn the recording off.